the legislative update. My name is Lawrence Olson with the Texas Good Roads Association, and I'm going to introduce our three presenters today. Our first presenter will be Chairman John Corona of Dallas. And Chairman Corona is has time constraints today. He wanted me to let the audience know that probably upon the completion of his remarks, no disrespect, but he's got an airplane here in a little bit, and so he's got to take off. So he wanted you to know that. Chairman Corona served three terms in the House representing the northern part of Dallas County. He was elected to the State Senate in 1996, and next year will be elected to his fifth term in the State Senate. I'm going out on a limb here, John, but not much in predicting your electoral success. About 18 months ago, Lieutenant Governor Dewhurst named Mr. Corona to chair the Transportation and Homeland Security Committee, and he has not slowed down for a minute since that time. He has been a tremendous friend of those trying to improve transportation funding. After he exhausted numerous efforts to try to put some, quote, trust back in the trust fund, his final rabbit that he pulled out of the hat was SJR 64, a proposed constitutional amendment, which you'll be hearing a lot about between now and November 6th. It will allow the next legislature to issue up to $5 billion in general obligation bonds for highway improvements, a very, very significant step forward. And with that, Chairman Corona, I'd ask you to come forward and share with the group. Thank you, John.
Thank you for inviting me here today, Lawrence, and for that introduction. It is a pleasure to come before you today, and it is wonderful to see the growing attendance at this transportation forum, and it obviously bodes well not only for the organizers of the event but for the future of transportation here in our state. I'm always hesitant when I stand up to speak before a group on transportation without acknowledging my committee director, Stephen Polunsky, because he really is the individual behind the scenes that does so much work for us. Thank you. I know Stephen will appreciate that. He works amazing hours and has a real devotion to good transportation policy. He certainly is a friend and supporter of TxDOT, and he is a friend and supporter of the legislative process. So thank you, Stephen. I want to start by noting, if you will allow me, the passing last week of Lady Bird Johnson. Mrs. Johnson, through her spirit and tenacity, gave us a lasting legacy in the Highway Beautification Act of 1965. The Beautification Act created control of outdoor advertising, including removal of certain types of signs along the nation's growing interstate system and the existing federal aid primary system. It also required certain junkyards along the interstate or primary highways to be removed or screened, and it encouraged scenic enhancement and roadside development. This piece of legislation is so identified with Mrs. Johnson that during its consideration, then-Congressman Bob Dole offered an amendment, and the amendment was to say that wherever the bill referred to the head of the enforcing agency, he struck the word secretary and substituted Lady Bird. And unfortunately, the amendment failed on a voice vote, but it showed just what a significant contribution First Lady Lady Bird Johnson had been on this particular legislation. And it was a hard-fought bill. It passed the House on a split vote at 1 in the morning after 14 hours of debate. So the events surrounding the Highway Beautification Act are significant to me because they really do encapsulize the issues we struggle with 40 years later, how the private and public sectors can work best together to benefit the economy and the quality of life. I mean that both in the larger sense of the public policy, if you will, but specifically, I do want to talk to you a little bit today about billboards. When the Highway Beautification Act was on the floor of Congress, an Iowa congressman held up a picture of a Texas billboard advertising the Johnson family's television station, of all things, and wondered if the president would hold a signing ceremony there. Well, that, if you stop and think about it in a nutshell, is the dilemma of billboards. Families rely on them for livelihoods. Businesses depend on them to deliver customers unavailable through other advertising media. Landowners appreciate the extra income they bring with minimal investment on their part. On the other hand, I think we'd all, in trying to be objective on the subject, we would all acknowledge that they do block natural vistas. They distract the driver on occasion. And today, we have full-color LED displays unheard of back when Mrs. Johnson undertook highway beautification. In Texas, session after session, bills to create a statewide prohibition or restriction on billboards or to do so on a county option basis have been filed, sometimes making it as far as floor consideration, but frankly not much further. This failure has led to a parade of one-shot bills, legislation addressing one county at a time. Imagine the time taken up by those of us here in Austin as we review those bills and as we listen to advocates both for and against billboards line up to testify on each bill. The last session, several statewide bills were again filed and heard, along with a dozen other one-shot bills. And I'm pleased to have successfully sponsored two bills, House Bill 412 and 413, legislation increasing enforcement against bandit signs, which are illegal signs on a stick on private property and sometimes public property. But I was unable to forge any kind of consensus on the larger question of a statewide policy for billboards. Aside from the logo sign legislation I carried and whose passage owes much to Representative Larry Phillips here, the only bill to make it through the process regarding billboards and scenery was House Bill 1521, affecting five roads in Austin County. And I can tell you that in its final form, it's not particularly a source of pride for anyone. So for this next session, I intend to carry legislation for a standard statewide policy regarding billboards. I don't want to spend precious legislative time any longer during the next session or others hearing hours of billboard debate on a county-by-county basis, and really I don't think you want us to do that either. The issues of transportation are just too many and too important, and we have so many other things to talk about. Well, when he signed the Highway Beautification Act, President Johnson said, "This administration has no desire to punish or to penalize any private industry or any private company or any group or any organization of complex associations in this nation. But we are going to allow them, we're not going to allow them to intrude their own specialized private objective on the larger public trust." And I think really that's how I feel about billboards and also my sentiments when it comes to another issue we wrestled with this session, which was the extent of privileges afforded when we involve private sector capital in our transportation system. We refer to this generally as public-private partnerships or PPPs. The public perception being what it is, these partnerships became associated with CDAs, or Comprehensive Development Agreements, and those were intertwined in the public mind with the Trans-Texas Corridor. You all, by this point, know the story well. On March 1st of this year, my committee held a public hearing on the topics that went all day long, and we heard from experts on all sides of public-private partnerships. We heard from landowners, one of whom claimed that she held an original Spanish land grant and did not want to give it back to Spain. Another who brought a guitar and expressed in song his opinion about the Trans-Texas Corridor. I can't repeat the song, but I can assure you he was not a supporter. And we heard about the benefits of private capital and the cost in public confidence. From that day forward, we have suggested and struggled with trying to find a way to address our mobility shortfalls that could satisfy the governor, the Senate, and the House. And the ultimate result of that was in Senate Bill 792. Not a perfect bill. They rarely are around here, as you know. But I think a bill that advances transportation and enables us to continue with necessary public-private partnerships, and I do believe they are absolutely necessary in a way that I think is both responsive to the public's concerns and responsible in terms of good public policy. The intent of Senate Bill 792 is to place a two-year moratorium on CDAs except for specific projects in areas where local leaders requested exemptions. And boy, are there some exemptions. It ensures that local authorities have the first option to build new toll projects and may use state rights of way as needed. It sunsets the CDA statutes in 2009 and in the meantime subjects them to reasonable safeguards such as a limitation on non-compete agreements, stronger buyback provisions, reviews by the Attorney General, the Legislative Budget Board, and the State Auditor. And also an interim study, which I was speaking with the Lieutenant Governor, Governor Dewhurst, about just a half an hour ago. Senate Bill 792 requires TxDOT to make CDA and toll project details available to the public. I think that's always a good thing to do. And additionally, it permits the Transportation Commission to issue bonds to secure the State Highway Fund, our Fund 6, up to $6 billion instead of the present $3 billion. It was the best result we could get at the time. I did not think then that it was the best we can do, and I still don't. I am eagerly awaiting the next legislative session, and we will have a full plate indeed. But I believe the answer to our transportation funding challenges today really does lie in a diverse portfolio of revenue options and a well-regulated approach to private-public partnerships. I also believe that 2009 will be the year when we can accomplish these things, and I think now's the time when we lay the groundwork. Here, in my opinion, is how we're going to get there. First, we need to reduce the amount of transportation revenue going to non-transportation purposes. Existing fines, fees, and permit revenues that are coming from transportation uses should go back into the State Highway Fund or the Texas Mobility Fund. One of the first bills I filed, which was Senate Bill 126, would have returned about $300 million a year. Multiply that by 10, and you see what effect we have when we put that money in the Mobility Fund. Second, we need to increase the yield from existing revenue sources, particularly our motor fuels tax. The fear of a backlash from raising these taxes is absolutely unfounded. I can tell you, as I go across this state and I speak with group after group, people will tell you themselves the most encouraging and most conservative approach to funding our transportation needs is by raising that gasoline tax revenue. Now, none of us here today, certainly not myself, believe that is the answer to all of our transportation needs. Certainly not, candidly, in the immediate future would it be even possible through that means to address but a fraction of the projects. But again, what we want is a comprehensive approach that has multiple options. One approach, again, is to raise the gas tax outright. Another is to index it. Somewhere there's an answer that I believe the legislature will come to by this next session, 2009. And while it is true that the legislature did not receive these ideas warmly in this last session, there were a lot of factors at play, and I believe many of those factors will have resolved themselves, and legislators, when faced with the understanding, the greater understanding of the need to have not only public-private partnerships and not only toll roads, but additional money to provide roadways in general for the public, will realize that increasing motor fuels tax is one part of an overall puzzle that we have to complete. And thirdly, we've seen the public acceptance of using debt instruments to fund transportation. The glaring omission in our portfolio in the past has been that we had no general obligation bonds to issue backed by the faith and credit of the state. As Lawrence mentioned a moment ago, we're about to change that. Texas has bonding capacity upwards of another $20 billion. So we hope that with the voter approval in November, we'll be able to take $5 billion of that total 20 and dedicate that for new source of transportation funding. Senate Joint Resolution 64 will be on the ballot, goes to the voters in November, and I hope you'll help me see that become law. There are some who say the legislature has rejected those approaches. I really have to tell you again, I think the timing was simply not right, and I believe the message will be heard better as we approach 2009. Last interim, the legislature and its consciousness was awakened by the existence and extent of diversion through the efforts of groups such as Tex 21 or the Texas Urban Transportation Alliance. These groups came forward along with many others and along with many of you right here in this room to know that we've got to have excellent information out in front of the public if we're going to be successful on these issues. We didn't make headway, or we did make some headway, I guess it's really a fair statement, on diversion this session, though we didn't make the kind of headway we needed. And clearly, in an environment where the diversion still tops $1 billion in a budget period, that is unacceptable, and it's unacceptable use of our very limited transportation funds. The drumbeat continues, and we just need to make sure that it keeps louder. Just last week, the San Antonio Express News, had an excellent article on transportation funding shortfall, and it culminated in an editorial titled, "Put the Brakes on Filching from the State Highway Fund." I don't think they could have said it more succinctly or in better form. The second thing we have to do is see to it that the fiscal pressure on the state is greater than ever. We have to recognize that that's the case. The federal government continues to rescind highway funding with increasing likelihood of it continuing and the flattening of a federal highway trust fund in the immediate future. Highway construction costs are going nowhere but up without the financial assistance or at least the cooperation of the public sector. We are indeed challenged. Tolls can only go up so far, and ultimately there are only so many projects that can be viably funded with tolls. We've not found a highway fairy or a Harry Potter incantation that'll create a new source of revenue just yet, though I can assure you if we thought we could, we'd be working on it. There are other revenue sources that are simply not appropriate. By not appropriate, I am talking about photographic enforcement of speed and the fine revenue that comes from that, or the enforcement of red light cameras. We already have a program in Texas called the Driver Responsibility Program that was intended to inject revenue into our system, and I think it's been a failure up to this point, or as we like to say in legislative terms, it's been a disappointment. Since the program was created, we've not seen near the revenue that we had once projected. Third on my list of lessons from this session is the great increase in legislative interest in transportation. It is very pleasing to see the number of bills, in contrast to last session, to the session before last, that passed this session dealing. And a very telling statistic is this. In the 79th regular session, 82 bills from this committee ended up passing. In the 80th session, 130 bills passed into law. That's over a 50% increase. These numbers are powerful indicators to me that high-profile bills like the moratorium or the occasional misguided effort to actually provide a gas tax vacation are not likely to be serious public policy in the years ahead. Lawrence, how are we on time? Okay. I said that not all of these bills are transportation related. Some are actually on the homeland security side of the equation. To some people, really, those two issues nowadays especially are one and the same. A number of witnesses testified that they oppose the Trans-Texas Corridor because of the increase in crime it will bring, one perspective anyway. The logic goes like this. Crime thrives on mobility. The corridor will increase mobility. Therefore, the corridor will increase crime, and it must be stopped. That's the message we've heard. Well, the last step is probably where the logic fails in that way of thinking. They're right. Crime thrives on mobility, but stopping the corridor clearly won't stop crime. Crime has to be addressed at its roots. And according to the National Drug Intelligence Center, Texas is one of the most vulnerable states now in terms of trafficking and smuggling of illicit drugs into the United States. Dallas and Houston are two primary markets. And I have to tell you, though, it's a problem all across our state. Gangs are primary distributors of drugs in this country, marijuana and cocaine, but also heroin, methamphetamine, and ecstasy. We're dealing with gangs such as MS-13, the Latin Kings, the Rolling 60s, the Bloods, the Texas Syndicate. It's almost comical if it weren't so deadly serious, and it is deadly serious. As I visited earlier today with the Lieutenant Governor, we spoke of the fact that today our real homeland security threat in this state comes more from the increased drug trafficking and the gang violence that it brings than even perhaps outside traditional sources of terrorism as you and I might otherwise recognize them. Gangs are not just part of the Houston or Dallas problem either. We've got gang activity, heavy gang activity today in Wichita Falls, Abilene, Austin, McAllen, El Paso, New Braunfels, Corpus Christi, Galveston. If you have a city of 250,000 or more in this state, you have a gang problem. And if you are a city of 100,000 in this state, there is a 9 out of 10 chance that you have gang activity in your small town, your city as well. That is the real threat of the day in terms of homeland security in this state. So I'll be working this interim to address the gang problem. I believe it's one of the most critical issues, again, facing us. And to the extent that transportation infrastructure can assist, I believe we have to evaluate our options, taking extreme care that such things as the use of data and images from cameras do not overstep the necessity to employ them. There are a number of other successes. Very, very briefly, as I close, I want to share with you. House Bill 1857 allows TxDOT to work with Texas counties in preserving pathways for future transportation projects. That's an important bill. Senate Bill 255, shepherded through the House quite ably by Representative Phillips, requires TxDOT to publish a detailed report on its activities. Again, very important. We must also make it easier for you to notify TxDOT when you sell your car so you don't get tickets intended for the person who bought it. We made school buses safer in this session. We passed several measures improving truck safety. We increased the permitting cost for overweight trucks. We have allowed advertising in driver's license mailers to help offset some of our cost to the state. We've done as many innovative things as we can working jointly with the House. And I say that with emphasis and very proudly, working jointly with the House to build good transportation policy. It's no secret that there's that occasional rivalry which lifts its head up between the House and the Senate. But on the issues of transportation, I'm proud that we've been able to work together, and we enjoy great relations and really fine men and women on both committees. When he signed the Highway Beautification Act, President Johnson said simply this: the bill does not represent anything that we wanted. It does not represent what we need. It does not represent what the national interest requires. But it's a first step, and there will be other steps. For though we crawl before we walk, we're going to walk. I would say to you that that is true for us as well in the legislature as we work on transportation issues. These issues in this past session, modestly, we crawled a bit. But I really do believe if we have our way on the committee, we intend to ride next session. I want to thank all of you for what you mean to public transportation and transportation all across our state, the private sector, the public sector working together, as we will continue to do. I appreciate the opportunity to speak briefly with you today. And Lawrence, safe motoring.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. I'm pleased to report to you that Chairman Corona has told me and others in our group that he would be proud to serve as the honorary chairman of our campaign for the passage of SJR 64 this November, John, and we appreciate that so very much. I want to just add a little personal note. I've observed and been around the state capitol seeing members of both bodies since 1967, for off and on, yeah. And Senator Corona is among the one of the brightest minds and quickest studies. He assumed the reins about 17 months ago, and transportation legislation and the department and everything else is quite a complex issue. And he is unbelievable in his grasp. And I know Chairman, you attribute some of that to Polonsky, and which is due. But another thing that's admirable about the good chairman is that he's fairly quick witted. One time, one of his good and dear colleagues, Senator Wentworth, approached him with an unfriendly amendment on the floor, and Chairman Corona was heard to remark that he loved Senator Wentworth almost like a distant relative. So he did dispatch the amendment as well. So, Mr. Chairman, we know what your schedule is, and so anytime you have to head out, we understand that. He's the proud father of five, and runs an extremely successful national realty management firm, graduate of the University of Texas, and we're just proud to have Senator Corona as a friend and supporter of transportation. The next gentleman whom I will present to you today, Chairman Corona mentioned him several times in a laudatory way, is the Representative Larry Phillips, who represents Fannin and Grayson County. Larry was elected in 2003, and he was elected in a special election. And when he came to the House, he was number 150. But obviously, the leadership knew of his capabilities. He joined the Transportation Committee as vice chairman, and he has continued to serve in that role the last three sessions. Larry spent time growing up here in Austin before he graduated from Baylor University, and later from the University of Houston Law School. And he and his wife are proud parents of three children. Larry, if you'll come and share with us, we'll appreciate to hear from you.
Thank you. Well, it's an honor to be with you. Okay, you can get that down. All right. It is an honor to be with you today, and it's always an honor to be with Senator Corona and hear his remarks. And Lawrence, it's good. Appreciate your words of wisdom through the sessions, and you have a great first name. Also, look forward to seeing JC's presentation. Please show us the money from the feds. The key to future transportation in Texas is kind of what I want to talk about by reviewing what we saw this last session and what. I've been kind of observing over the last three sessions that I've been involved with transportation. But I think the key to the future of transportation in Texas is education. And you think, what do you mean education? Y'all have had all those sessions on education. Are you talking about educating students? No, I'm talking about the education community, which is seated in this audience here and the other areas here where presentations are going on. It's your job. You need to engage in education about transportation issues in the state. It's, to me, critical, and that's why a lot of things that happen where the environment was right for certain things to happen or not happen last session, I think because of lack of education, lack of knowledge about the true needs in this state. One influential and insightful senator who happens to be in this room said the following: there is still a lack of understanding as to how critical the transportation shortfall in Texas has become. And Senator Corona, in fact, the article you talked about, shared that. And I think that's important. I am here today to challenge you, as I look back over the session, to take up the mantle of educating the communities that we live in. First off, you need to educate the legislature. And one of the good things that happened out of this, because both the House and Senate became involved in transportation issues like they'd never had the two sessions before I came. When I first came here in 2003, we had major issues that are still the same issues today, and I'm going to point those out so we'll know what to educate people on. But the legislature, we passed through two sessions, major legislation, I think important for this state and prime examples of the rest of the nation, how to deal with funding issues and other issues. But the first and foremost group that you need to help educate, and that TxDOT and those on the commission, those of us that are involved in transportation, and then those of you that are in the private sector, you need to help educate the legislature, those House members and senators, to help get them the truth of what's going on out there, the truth of the shortfall in transportation dollars, and also what are the tools that have been developed the last 2 years, and when is public-private partnership appropriate? When is it not? What's a CDA, and why do we have a CDA? Help educate them of the alphabet soup that I walked into transportation committee my first session and have learned and tried to learn and are still learning. So educate the legislature. Secondly is to educate the local officials. Now, most of them probably give us all a good education because they know what it is. It's trying to piece together and work with TxDOT and work with us to deal with a crisis situation in some areas of the state dealing with their local transportation needs. So we need to educate local officials so that then they can be educators. Need to educate the media. Get involved with the media and explain. And when you see an article that you have an issue with, or you think, well, that's not quite right, or that didn't quite paint an issue appropriately, get involved with the media and say, hey, I'm an expert in this area. I can help. And I can help explain from my perspective. That's what the media wants. The business community is the next group that you need to educate. Once a business community understands the economic realities of failing to take action on our funding source needs and our other needs in our transportation system, they will really step up to it. And I know they already are, but you have to educate them and equip them and explain the difference between the tools that are out there and why they're necessary and why, you know, the gas tax options are there, or indexing the gas tax. Those are some of the things the senator talked about. Most importantly, we have to educate the citizens, and that's all of us. And all of that group, the legislature, the local officials, the media, the business community, needs to really go to the task of educating our citizens of the truth, the reality of our transportation budget shortfall, the reality of what options are out there and which are the best options that we're going to take, so that they can be a participant. And I think that's what happened is the first two sessions I was here, we passed a lot of legislation really quickly. We had the Trans-Texas Corridor talked about, you know, and put out there, and people were thinking that's down the road, years down the road. And all of a sudden they start having meetings in 254 counties in the state. And then that 10-mile-wide gap, I mean, that thing's going to be 10 miles wide. Y'all know that it's going to be 10 miles wide coming all right through Texas from all the way up. Well, no, it's not going to be 10 miles wide. That's just the study area. Well, what's a study area? And then you show up at the meetings. And so we have to educate ahead of time instead of just all of a sudden having the meeting where we're doing the NEPA process and you're having an engineer talk about this in a presentation. We need to be educating a long time before that, explaining why is this necessary and how are you going to be affected, citizens, and why this is the best, if it's the best, a way to go. And, of course, I would be hesitant or reticent not to talk about that. Politics, I think, played a lot of role into developing this environment that we had this last session. But please, foremost, your job as transportation leaders is the education job. And if you fail on that education job, we're going to continue to have sessions where we don't accomplish things that we need to do. So that is a challenge here today. And I talked about ways to, for you to get educated last time I spoke, last year at this event. Let's start educating ourselves a little bit today and kind of go through this. I think this is amazing. I went to Google News yesterday, and I like to, when I was thinking about this, I just Googled TxDOT. I don't know if any of y'all Google things, but it's fun to find out what's going on. You know, TxDOT and transportation issues are at the forefront of our citizens, and we need to educate them. And let's educate ourselves today and find out what is important. What are those primary things that our citizens are concerned about and the transportation needs? And it's across the state. TxDOT studying stoplights in Commerce. That's a Greenville Herald banner. That's, most of us don't think about that, but we are involved in their day-to-day lives of transportation. Redo, 1826 funds found. That's the San Marcos Daily Record. I can remember reading something about those funds while that road wasn't built properly. $6 million project to widen FM 775, Seguin Gazette Enterprise. Proposal includes widening US 290, Houston Chronicle. TxDOT losing $72 million in federal funds. I know you don't work for the feds anymore, but I got to look over there. TxDOT suspends mowing of high grass near Johnson City. I mean, it's amazing how many things that our lives are affected by just TxDOT and our transportation needs. Price Road construction snags east to west traffic, Brownsville Herald, so we're down in the valley here. TxDOT hosting open house, Fredericksburg Standard, so that's that education process. We're now in the central Texas. Construction to connect East EP to NE, running smoothly, that's El Paso Times. Now we're way out in our far west Texas. Swastika on TxDOT sign near Valente Beach, that's KXAN-TV, I'm not sure where that is. By Lake Travis. TxDOT announces work schedule. Cameron Herald back down south. TxDOT to close roads. Amarillo. U.S. Highway 96 Coalition meets in St. Augustine with Senator Nichols. Nacogdoches Daily Sentinel. I bet he shared with them how he felt about these issues. drivers advised to be cautious. That's the KRGV Texas. I mean, gosh, cautious. TxDOT begins improvement to FM 493 in Donna area. The Team 4 News. Cities, patients wearing thin with TxDOT. I wonder if we've heard that before. Lufkin Daily News. TxDOT approves Mobility Authority. That's another RMA created the Paris News in Paris, Texas. TxDOT commissions border-wide bridge traffic study. Monitor Texas. The Troop City Council table study request. The Tri-County Leader. Anybody know where East Texas the Troop is? Toll road pick much more than coin toss. Wonder where that is. Dallas Morning News, Dallas 121 project. For your information, White House speed limit set by city, not TxDOT. Don't mess with Texas wins America's favorite slogan. That's a great one. HappyNews.com got 400,000 votes. Boy, TxDOT. Good thing y'all got a lot of employees over there, Steve. Crusader faces big task for rail crossing safety. Rail crossing safety, critical issue. Houston Chronicle. Fitch rates Galveston County, Texas $48 million pass-through toll. And it goes on. That's a business wire out of California. TxDOT taking calls about damage from lost load on 610 loop. My Fox Houston. TxDOT seal coating to involve traffic detours. Cameron Herald. It's just amazing as we go on. NTTA endorsed for 121 project. That's Dallas. And I'll end with Texas loves their trucks. That's Amarillo.com. And this was just yesterday that had come up the last few weeks. How important these issues are in TxDOT and transportation. And it's good as a policymakers or those in this industry to step back and see how important what you do every day is to the lives of our public and to our citizens. And I think I'm going to talk about some things that just cropped up in that and some things from this session, things of conversation that I have with citizens across my district and the state, the local officials we talk with, and talk about some of the high-end issues of what we've got to continue to do. And these are things you know and things you're dealing with. Here are the main things I think we need to focus on in education and learning and to address. And if we can address these things and educate citizens about them, we'll be far ahead of the curve. Congestion relief, I think, is one of the number one issues that we have to face as a transportation community. It's that quality of life, the cost or financial aspect of it, the effect on the environment of our transportation system and the congestion, and our economic growth. If we don't take proper action, our environment is going to continue to have issues. We're going to continue to have issues with the feds. Our economic growth is going to see a down pattern, whereas up, it's a skyrocketing. And those are things we have to do. Congestion relief, number one issue. I'm not going to rank them in categories because people start, their favorite pet doesn't get ranked. But congestion relief, safety, that is a huge issue. And I'm going to go over some bills in a second. And you'll see how safety is important. Accountability and transparency, that's what we're talking about. The citizens need to know why we're doing this. And that's where that education is so important. And the bills that were looked at this session related to this. Public input that goes right and low, right a part of that, and affordability. Texans don't like to spend money they don't have to, and they won't do that. Those are the top areas that I believe Texans are concerned with transportation. And congestion relief, those of y'all that want to see mass transit, just put that in there. There's so many areas that congestion relief impacts our lives. The tough job is that nothing's constant. All the issues I just mentioned are things that we must look through the prism of current and projected population growth, the changing and increased technology, and environmental concerns. We must continue to look at everything we do through those prism. And we must address these top areas or these top issues with not just a few of the next 2 to 10 years, but the next 30 to 50 years. And failure to do this is unacceptable, even if not always political expedient, which is something we talked, which Senator Corona addressed. We're going to have to get past the political expediency of some of the solutions that we're facing. Let's talk about the education. Let's get some education from the actions of the House Committee on Transportation this session. We considered 343 bills. We did have quite a high uptake of bills that were filed. 343 bills, both House and Senate, that made it through our committee or made it to our committee. 178 of those bills or resolutions were voted out of the committee, and 96 of those ultimately passed with one veto. Now, there was another House Transportation Committee this session called County Affairs, ably led by Senator Wayne Smith. And, of course, that's where House Bill 1892, which vetoed, and Senate Bill 792, the premier transportation legislation, came out of this session. And I talked to Chairman Smith yesterday and told him I was going to mention that. And he said, in politics, anytime you get your name out there, that's good. But to bring you back into that session, and some of you may not want to go back to that session, some of you may have loved that session. I want to go through, we call these the relating clause. At the start of each bill, it tells what the bill relates to. And it'll give you an idea of kind of what was going on in the Transportation Committee. And some of these passed, many of them didn't. But I just want to pique your interest. So those of you that weren't watching all the time or weren't down here, although I saw some of you every Tuesday morning and well into the night at times, these are some of the issues that we were dealing with because of, I think, lack of education of legislative members and also the public and local officials. Here's one. Relating to the abolition of the Texas Transportation Commission and the creation of a commissioner of transportation as an elected statutory state officer. Well, think about that, having that bill come up. So totally change how we've been doing things. Let's just get rid of the commission and we'll go with an elected official. The politics certainly wouldn't have anything to do with that, would there? Relating the first option of a local toll project building entity, relating to the first option of a local toll project building entity to finance, construct, or operate a new toll project. Did y'all see that issue? And we heard about that, how it was addressed in SB 792. Relating to non-competition provisions and contracts for the acquisition, design, construction, financing, maintenance, or operation of a toll project. So the non-com- uh, competition provision relating to the length of certain agreements with private entities related to transportation projects. You saw that in SB 792. Relating to a moratorium or the inclusion of certain provisions in a CDA or the sale of a toll project and the creation of duties of a study committee. That sounds a lot like SB 792. Relating to the setting of tolls by toll project entities. Relating to the cessation of tolls on a toll project. Relating to the operation of a state highway or segment of a state highway as a toll project. Relating to the conversion of a non-tolled state highway or segment of the state highway system to a toll project. Relating to a moratorium on tolls by the Texas Department of Transportation. So did y'all see tolls were an issue that are concerned with the public? Relating to performance audits of certain regional transportation authorities. Relating to the powers and duties of the Texas Department of Transportation in an area under jurisdiction of a local or regional toll authority. You see we're having some conflict between our local regional toll authorities and TxDOT and try to figure out what's the best way and how they work together. And many of you in this room were involved in those issues and need to continue to figure out how we work, make sure TxDOT and the local toll authorities are working together. Relating to the repeal of authority for the establishment and operation of the Trans-Texas Corridor. Do I need to say more than that? How much time do I spend talking about the Trans-Texas Corridor when people ask me, what about that thing? Again, it gets back to public education. A lot of people have misinformation about that project. And if they have it about that project, I know they have it about projects that have not been advertised as much. Here's another one relating to the intersection of certain roads with the Trans-Texas Corridor. Do you see that these are the issues that I think that our education process needs to be focusing on? Go back and see the legislation that's filed. Those were filed because constituents had been sometimes screaming, emailing, communicating with the legislators about these issues. And a lot of times the legislators didn't really know and had been educated to understand and give the good answers, or I mean not the good answers, but the right answers to facts versus fiction. Going on, another big issue that related from that was the use of eminent domain for highway or transportation or other transportation purposes. Relating and requiring government entities to inform landowners of their right to seek counsel in eminent domain proceedings. Eminent domain was a huge issue and continues to be an issue. It doesn't serve this community, the transportation community, well if they don't help educate the public as to their rights and make it clear what's going to happen in with your local leaders, everybody, regarding eminent domain. People are very nervous about eminent domain. They don't want to give up their property, and they sure don't want to give it up if they think it's just going to go to the back pocket of a big corporation. And that's what we're hearing, and that's why you're seeing bills like this filed, when we have to step back and know, with the population growth that we're having, with the congestion that we're having, you have to take it back to the issues that they care most about, that we read about, congestion issues, quality of life issues related to congestion, the cost of congestion to us. Those are the things we have to educate our citizens on. Then the other issues, and that's kind of gives you the idea of what we were facing. And I want to talk about some of the other issues that we faced, which Senator Corona talked about. Commercial motor vehicle safety. It was a huge amount of time we spent on motor vehicle safety. School bus safety. We spent several days on school bus safety. License plate issues. Again, we go back to license plate issues. Specialty license plate. You guys need a specialty license plate. Driver's license issues and how you get, who should get a driver's license, when they should get a driver's license, and signage. And that's the, and I applaud you for tasking that. One session I was on transportation and the other was, the other committee was culture, recreation, and tourism. You can imagine the culture, recreation, and tourism. They didn't want to have billboards everywhere, the people that brought bills there. And so these bills were just assigned in different committees. Well, since I was on transportation and on cultural recreation tourism, I'd leave one committee hearing and heard all about billboards and go across the hallway to another committee hearing and hear all about billboards again. By the end of that time, I pretty much had gotten billboards out. And I would say, you know, one of these days, you're not going to have billboards because they're just going to all come on your radio and come on your computer in your car, and that's ultimately what's happening. But I applaud you on doing that because the amount of time that we spend does not make sense, and we need to have a uniform state policy on that issue. And I think that's extremely important. stepping back, the specific concerns related to CDAs that those bills are addressed are as follows. The length of contract of CDAs, disclosure of the terms, is it the best use of dollars, are the concessionaires getting too much money, so that should go to the state or to the local area, the role of TxDOT versus local authorities in this area, the buyback provision, if it's such a good project and we want to buy it back, and eminent domain issues, as I discussed. If you'll focus on those issues and help educate and help us in developing policy that's good policy to deal with those issues, I think we will not have a session like we did this past session where we kind of had to pause. And I think pausing is okay, and I think that's what the citizens demanded. We'll be looking forward to next session, and you'll see these same exact bills filed if we don't do a good job educating. We need to have bills filed next session that are future thinking, that are innovative, that are dealing with the funding issues that we need, not with trying to put brakes on things, because we need to come up with those solutions and have an agreement before we get there of what's the good policy as it relates to those issues. And if you help educate over the next 18 months, it'll be very important for us to do that. Now let's talk about the future a little bit more. Senate Bill 792 creates a study committee, and this will be your first part of the education process that you can be involved with. It's a legislative study group of 9 members. The lieutenant governor, as the senator said, appoints 3. The speaker is appointing 3, and the governor is appointing 3. I'm not sure yet. I talked to Speaker Craddock yesterday. Not sure exactly the timing. I think they're working on the timing now of when they're going to be making that announcement. They're to conduct public hearings and study the public policy implications of including a comprehensive development agreement entered into by a toll project entity with a private participant in connection with a toll project. Boy, don't you like how we write laws? A provision that permits the private participant to operate and collect revenue from the toll project. We're going to just study CDAs and see if it's a good public policy. That's your first education, but if you're just showing up at the public meetings and expressing your opinion, you've missed the boat. You need to be involved with educating before that. And if you have constituencies, if you're a local government and you want to bring some of your economic business leaders and educate them on these issues, bring them to explain the benefits, or if you're against them, the problems with these areas. But that is going to be very important this coming up for the next session. A lot of work is going to be done in that, and you're going to see. So they're going to have hearings, and then they're going to present a report with the proposals and recommendations that come out of that. Those should be lively hearings at times, and it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that. I'm anxiously looking forward to that. The other thing that's going to happen this next session, before this next session, is the 2009 Sunset Review, and TxDOT's preparing for that. I've already had a chance to read all of the report that was put on the internet. Actually, I haven't read all of it. Trouble with my printer, but read most of it. And it'll be interesting. Many of you probably stayed up late last night watching it, reading it too. That process, for you that are unfamiliar with the process, it's a 12-member body of legislators and public members. And they're appointed, that body is appointed by the Lieutenant Governor, the Speaker of the House, and they assist the Commission staff, assisting the Commission is a staff whose reports provide an assessment of an agency's program. So they're going to assess TxDOT. Do you have too many employees over there? Do you have not enough employees? Do we have the right type of employees? Do we need to change how we structure TxDOT? That's going to be, all of those things will be on the table, and you'll see all of those things. So that's going to be a huge part of what happens this next session, is that 2009 Sunset Review process, and I think you'll be looking forward to that. Are we good? Let me just make sure. Let me finish by saying this. In working with us this next session, please follow my suggestion of education. It's the most important thing that we can do, I think, to help our transportation go forward. And lastly, those of you from areas like mine or outside the big cities, if you can help us work with pass-through financing and finding true funding source for pass-through financing, it'll help forward a lot of those projects that right now are not being met, that are contributing to congestion in the bigger cities because of the congestion getting there. Thank you for your time, and I'll be around for questions.
Well, both Chairman Corona and Chairman Phillips have given us very adequate charges for us to work diligently on between now and January of 2009, when the 81st session will be convening. 2009 will also be an extremely important year for our community because of the reauthorization of the federal highway bill at that time. And we are honored to have with us today Mr. J.C. Sandberg with the Washington law firm of Baker & Donaldson. And he is the counsel and a member of the firm's federal public policy group. Mr. Sandberg previously was the lead negotiator for the majority party at the Senate Environment and Public Works. He was very instrumental in helping craft the $286 billion reauthorization of the TEA Act of 21st Century, T21. Mr. Sandberg is a graduate. He's from a little west, out western part of Texas, Arizona, and graduated at the University of Arizona College of Law, was recognized by the National Journal as one of the Hills, Capitol Hill's 100 list of key congressional staff members. J.C., you'd be interested to know that 30-some-odd years ago, I was recognized as one of the Hill's top 5,000 Hill staffers at that time. So with that, I would call on Mr. J.C. Sandberg to make a presentation. J.C.?
Thank you, Mike, for helping us out. I appreciate that kind introduction. I have a dear friend who is a Longhorn, and when he found out that I was speaking here today, he sent me some Aggie jokes. Not just one Aggie joke, but 11 pages of Aggie jokes. But discretion being the better part of valor, I won't share any of those. Well, maybe just one. Why are Aggies attracted to smart women? Because opposites attract. In all honesty, I am thankful for this opportunity, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today. As Lauren said, once upon a time, not too long ago, I was a Senate lawyer. I worked on the Environment Public Works Committee and had the good fortune, or curse as it may be, of heading the Senate delegation at the staff level for the last transportation reauthorization. I don't think that any discussion of what happens at the federal level now we can't really have that discussion without talking about what's happening right now, and that is the return of divided government. After several years, the Congress and the White House now are controlled by different political parties. The new Democratic power shift is obviously a part of that. 50 Democratic members elected or reelected in states or districts that the president carried in 2004. So that should give you a flavor of kind of who is now in the body. Several moderates, I guess, Democratic moderates were elected, and you're seeing the push and pull of that now as this debate goes forward. The Iraq war seems to dominate pretty much everything at this point. Whether you're for the war or against it, that is definitely something that's dominating Washington and the rest of the country at this moment. And there are 8 members of the United States Senate running for president. I had a meeting with Senator Harry Reid, and he told me that no one would be more grateful than he would be when Super Tuesday rolls around in February, because he thinks it'll all be over then. So we're just a few months away from that. Okay, on to the topic at hand, current transportation situation. The cost of congestion has quadrupled in the last 20 years. 3.7 billion hours of wasted time, and I have to give credit to the Texas Transportation Institute at Texas A&M for these numbers. 2.3 billion gallons of wasted fuel. Currently, proposed fiscal year 2008 obligation limitation of the Federal Aid Highway Program at $40.2 billion. 45% of all current highway funding comes from the Highway Trust Fund. And lastly, major projected funding shortfall starting in fiscal year 2009. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that later, but everybody in the transportation community is talking about that at a federal level. We are fast approaching a crisis point. Next, current developments. Technical corrections. Safety was an enormous bill, over 1,000 pages. And when you have a bill that big, I've described it as it was our baby, but it was an ugly baby. There were several problems with that bill, as there is with any major piece of legislation. So they're in the process of doing those technical corrections. House and Senate staff are meeting, trying to negotiate something. There's no agreement. There's no real champion. And as many of you know in this room, if there's no agreement and no real champion, it's basically not going to go anywhere. So you're probably going to be stuck with the bill as it is now until the next reauthorization. National Surface Transportation Policy and Revenue Study Commission. As many of you know, that was when we created this thing, when the Bush administration first proposed it and Congress latched onto it, the idea was going to be that they were going to hopefully create a framework for honest debate about financing and other things in the next reauthorization. And among those was gas tax. That was kind of something that, while Don Young talked about it in the House, no one was really able to grab the ball and run with it in that sense. They've held tons of hearings. Jack Schenendorf will be down here tomorrow to address a similar small group setting like this. And they're going to produce a report hopefully in December. And it's my hope, as someone who had a hand in creating that commission, that they do actually address financing. And as we get farther into this, we'll see kind of where the push and the pull is with the administration and public-private partnerships and some of the others now as in the new majority in Congress. Congressional hearings. The House is especially active on the transportation front. They've held myriad hearings on transportation this year, everything from public-private partnerships to the fate of the trust fund, by what did we really mean by the Surface Transportation Commission. Those things are all part of the mix. The role of the Appropriations Committee. As many of you are observing, they are now beginning to take a more active role in things, especially given that in 2009, we are expecting an enormous budget shortfall. Now, what does that mean? That means that in the last several years, and many of you know this, that the Appropriations Committee has gone rescinding contract authority. What does that mean? It means turning budget authority into something that they can use for other purposes. That's become a real issue. They're getting really aggressive with that. They're using it to fund other priorities that aren't necessarily transportation related. That is something people are watching out for. The other thing is that there's a potential $4 billion shortfall coming in 2009. And David Obey, who is the chairman of the House Appropriations Committee, just last week said, don't come looking for us to fill that hole. So that, as the discretionary side of the federal budget continues to grow, those allocations into the different appropriations committee don't always grow at the same level. So programs continue to be more and more squeezed, especially with the growth in the highway program. The highway program is a monster within that bill. Now, they've been put in with HUD, so it kind of is balanced out a little bit. On the transportation side, as the highway program continues to grow, it squeezes other programs. Again, that looming financial crisis. In the mid-session review, let me get this right. I want to get these numbers right because it's important. In February, the president's fiscal year 2008 budget predicted a highway account deficit of about $800 million. And depending on who you talk to, whether it was CBO or the president, the range was $240 to $800 million. Now, as of July 11th, which is the mid-session review, when the Office of Management and Budget, OMB, dirty little acronym in Washington, puts out their review, they're now predicting a $3.8 billion shortfall by the end of fiscal year 2009. That increasing to $9 billion in 2010 and $15 billion in 2011. That's just holding steady with the $40.2 billion current funding level. That's not even seeing the same increases for the last year that were written into the safety bill. Now, you can't talk about this looming financial crisis without talking about two people currently in Washington. One of those is Mary Peters, who is the Secretary of the Department of Transportation, former Federal Highway Administrator, and the other one is Jim Oberstar, the Chairman of the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, or the Authorizing Committee. So basically encapsulated in their two positions is kind of the fundamental groundwork, per se, for this next financing debate. And so I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking about each of their positions, and I'm sure after this is all said and done, if I've missed something, please ask me questions. First, we're going to start with Mary Peters, her perspective in the funding crisis. What does Secretary Peters have to say? She says the old way of doing business doesn't work. I don't think that there would be a lot of broad disagreement there. I think there do need to be some changes, and we'll see what Congressman Oberstar says that in some ways agrees with that. The next thing she says is that we need to refocus the program. What does refocus the program mean? It means that we need to get rid of some of the smaller ancillary programs. She did an interview that was published on Monday in a Hill newspaper, a Capitol Hill newspaper. The things she listed were things like safe routes to school, bike and pedestrian, things like the ferries, covered bridges, things like that. Now, if we really look at what those programs cost, maybe that's not going to move mountains, but it's kind of the beginning of an argument. And I know in Texas, I read through some of the information that you all put out about the 110th Congress, and one of the things that TxDOT talks about is enhancements. 10% of the surface transportation program goes to enhancements. Now, for a state like Texas, that means something. I think in the literature it said $336 million have to go to things like enhancements. It's kind of prescriptive, kind of hard for the state sometimes to find ways to credibly spend that money. So that might be an area in the next reauthorization where either you could cap it, you could do something. I'll be honest, there's too many champions of the enhancement program at the current present time to get rid of the 10%. That just probably won't happen. I think the best that you could hope for is advocating some sort of cap for large states, and I think that possibly could be within the realm of possibility. Next thing she says is public-private partnerships will lead the way. They are the panacea. And she's been fairly clear about this. I mean, the Department of Transportation is really, really behind this. I think originally, and I don't think I'm speaking out of school, there was some friction with the Surface Transportation Commission that the last transportation bill authorized, and the Department of Transportation for some time, because I think many of them felt that they were being force-fed public-private partnerships at the exclusion of everything else, raising the gas tax, indexing the gas tax. You know, any other option was kind of set to the side, and there was a championing of public-private partnerships. It's not to say they're a bad thing. They're definitely a tool in the toolbox, and I think that we'll come back to that in a little bit. And the last thing, obviously, was don't raise the gas tax. Now we go to Oberstar. Congressman Oberstar says the following things. He says, the Highway Trust Fund is not dead. It just needs adjustments and refinements. Well, what does that mean? Well, it could mean any number of things. I think that if you watch his comments lately, he's been far more careful about what he has said than Don Young was about the same time before the last reauthorization. Don Young was out saying, we're going to raise the gas tax and we're going to do, I think it was 5 cents in the first year, which is going to get us caught up with all the 10 years previous that we hadn't done anything with inflation, and then we're going to raise it a penny or 2 cents a year for the next 9 years. We're going to spend $375 billion, and everyone's going to be happy. Well, that really didn't happen. And I can't honestly say whether Jim Oberstar will advocate a gas tax increase. All I know is that he is not getting out in front of it. And I think that he could, in talking to staff and others just recently, that, you know, indexing some of those things, you might start to see some of those things creep into the debate as time moves on. But Oberstar, at this point, has been just kind of just avoiding that topic. He's not been getting out in front on it. The next thing, over the last decade, says Oberstar, and it's true, the federal gas tax has lost a quarter of its purchasing power due to inflation. He's extremely concerned, and I put that in quotes because those are his words, extremely concerned about the growing trend toward reliance on public-private partnerships. And if any of you ever need something to help you sleep at night, the House Transportation and Infrastructure website has their talking points on public-private partnerships. And it pretty much lays out Oberstar's objections to it. It's not exactly a stirring read, but it talks about things like non-compete clauses. Those are people that have dealt with toll roads know what those are, about the length of the lease, about you know, giving the public sector a chance. Is it really in the public interest? Are we thinking about what we're doing? Those are all things that he's concerned about. Public-private partnerships are a financing tool, but they're not the cure for the funding crisis. Now, what does that mean? Well, that could mean any of a number of things. But what I think it means is that he is willing to allow for public-private partnerships. In the last reauthorization, I have to be honest, he was not terribly helpful. The tolling provisions in the bill you see are a compromise and, in some instances, embarrassingly complicated. That was the best we could do at the time, given members' involvement in things, given Mr. Oberstar's absolute resistance for tolls. So I think that this next time around, it'll be an interesting debate. Now, as I'll talk about a little bit more, there really were no Senate champions for these things. So in the U.S. Senate, will someone emerge next time to really carry the water for public-private partnerships? It remains to be seen. This is again a direct quote, which is why it's in quote. Encouraging states to privatize their assets will barely begin to address our needs. So I think you're getting a flavor for how Congressman Oberstar feels. He thinks that this might not be the absolute panacea that Mary Peters thinks it is. I think he believes that it can play a role. And I think that before I go on, and now is as good a place as any, I think that it's important for states like Texas to continue to innovate. And I know that's easy for me to say because, like the Representative Phillips, I'm not fighting the fights. Washington watches these things. And if you have an example in Washington of something that works, that goes a long way to educating members, to steal his theme. And I think that Texas has always been at the forefront of all these innovative financing tools, and tolling is one of them. And I can't stress enough how important that is, even though I know sometimes in the state it causes a lot of heartburn. If you want these programs to persist at the federal level, there has to be credible examples of them. And Texas for a long time has been that innovative example of those things. Next thing. Okay, now, moving to the next reauthorization. Congressional activities, House and Senate. The Senate Environment and Public Works Committee, the committee in charge of the highway portion of the next reauthorization, so the 800-pound gorilla in the room, 80% of the funding, has a new chairman. It's Barbara Boxer. She's kind of an untested commodity in these things. She's been a champion of infrastructure in the past for funding, but she hasn't said a lot in great detail about her thoughts on the next bill, although she has periodically talked about freight, and that's obviously a huge issue in California and something that was kind of woefully inadequate in the last bill. Unfortunately, a lot of attention got soaked away up into projects, and a lot was unfortunately left on the table. Is this the last call for projects? Was safety the last call? If you've seen the recent appropriations bills, earmarks are not dead, but they have been significantly diminished. What does that mean for the next highway reauthorization? I don't know. I suspect there will not be 6,000 projects again. One can only hope. So, but what I will say is this. There were two different kinds of projects, and those projects that were what we call above the line, or money that was basically free to your states, if we replace those types of things, there are other programs that will fill the void, and one of those could potentially be some kind of a freight program. So while eliminating projects does save money for the bill, that money will be soaked up possibly in other projects and might not necessarily be distributed to the states via formula. Now, that gives a lot of people heartburn, and rightly so. The minimum guarantee will always be a big issue. I'm getting ahead of myself here. Will Congress catch a freight train? I think Congress will have to address freight in this next bill. I don't really see any credible way for Congress not to. Unfortunately, in the last bill, when we got into conference, the Senate had a kind of a freight program, but when we got to conference, the Senate had other priorities, and as you all know, in life, there's give and there's take and there's compromise, and the Senate minimum guarantee and formulas were of utmost importance to the Senate, and the House wanted projects. So freight, unfortunately, fell by the wayside. Are scenic byways bygone? What I mean by that, are we going to see the death of all these small programs? I think you will see a tightening of the belt. But as you all well know, when there it's always easier never to start doing something than it is to actually stop it. And I think that's a lesson we all learn in life. And I think in politics it's absolutely no different. And with each one of the scenic byways and covered bridges and ferries and enhancements and bike ped and safe routes to school and all these, you know, TCSP and all these programs that are kind of what we call non-core, non-formula programs, they all have champions. And they all have people that are going to want to see them survive. And they're all going to be some constituency somewhere that wants that to survive. Now, the difference in this bill and the last bill, obviously, is there's been an extreme belt tightening. There's just not the money anymore. So does that help push some of these programs finally off the table? I honestly can't say. I wouldn't bet on it, but I think there will be an honest debate about that given the funding constraints. Donor Don't Eat, Part 4. And I say Part 4 because my memory goes back, Ice-T, T21, and Save-T. So Part 4 will be this next reauthorization, which I hope will be the death of the T name, but I'm not sure yet. But donor donee issues continue to be a huge issue, and for the state of Texas and big donor states especially. The problem has always been in the Senate. You know, everybody gets a vote, and there's 100 of them, and that's just how it works. If it was in the House, a little easier, but not much, because you still have some large donor state, donee states in the East. But that will continue to be an issue. Mary Peters, in this interview, talked about refocusing, as we've talked about, the federal highway program. And, you know, refocusing it on things of compelling national interest, and in some way then giving money back to the states. And as many of you know, that's called turnback, which is a very dirty word in the federal program. And there's always a turnback bill every year. I wouldn't expect turnback, but I don't think that increasing your rate of return is outside the realm of possibility. I think that that's Senator Boxer is from a donor state with a voracious appetite. And one thing that Senator Boxer gets is the return. And now, as the chairman the last time, I think that was the main focus of her attention was return to California. Now, as the chairman as the chairman, is the likely chair of the conference, she has to worry about other things, and that formula share will take care of itself. But she's still, donor issues are still going to be utmost in her mind, and I'm sure the state of California is not going to let her forget that, and I'm sure the state of Texas won't let their members forget it either. This is every wonk's fantasy. Will contract authority and obligation limitation finally get in bed together? For those in the audience that know what I'm talking about, and rescissions is a dirty word, contract authority is always set above obligation limitation at the federal level. Obligation limitation is what you pay attention to because that's the real money. That's what the appropriators are saying every year, actually, in cash dollars, can be obligated in contract authority. That's not necessarily outlays. It's very confusing. But it is actually, basically, given projections of future revenues into the trust fund, what can we spend? That contract authority has always been set above obligation limitation. It's caused confusion. It's caused problems. And especially during this reauthorization, it's caused enormous heartburn to the states because the difference has been in the neighborhood of obligation limitation being about 85 to 88% of contract authority. That's a big problem. It traditionally hadn't been that way. It is now. So in the next bill, one idea that's been thrown around, it was thrown around the last time, I think is gaining traction, is making those two one and the same. That presents some other interesting issues that we don't need to get into, but that is something that people are thinking about. $64,000 question. Will they raise the gas tax? The last time working for Senator Reid, I think one of the things that someone said it, I believe it was the former mayor of San Antonio, no one wants to go out and say, we're going to raise taxes. Nobody wants to do it. There isn't anybody on the planet, and there's no politician on the planet that wants to do that. But will there be a profile encouraged this time that steps up and can credibly say that's not a pariah on tax issues? Now, the way Washington works, there's Republicans and there's Democrats. And there's the coalitions form, but there has to be credible advocates on both sides of the issue. Credible advocates for increasing the gas tax on both sides of the aisle for this to happen. And it's not to say that Don Young was an incredible advocate. He absolutely was. He just, the last time, maybe got a little bit too far ahead of himself. And so it remains to be seen whether people will get behind a push toward either index the gas tax or increase it in any meaningful way. In the absence of that, what are we left with? Well, are we left with a diminished highway program? Is the era of these huge bills over with? I tend to think not, and I'll tell you why. Final thoughts. Program's going to survive. There are a lot of doom and gloom projections right now, and they are true. I mean, the trust fund is in terrible financial shape. But Congress, in its own way, and somehow always seems to rise to the occasion on these things. They did it the last time. You know, that we couldn't do 318. We had to do 250. And somewhere in the middle, there came the truth. And I think that this time, it'll have to happen the same way. Congress reacts, but oftentimes fails to innovate. And that, so I think a reaction would be maybe raising the gas tax, indexing, I don't know. Innovation would be maybe expanding public-private partnerships, making, you know, private activity bonds more available, getting rid of some of the toll pilot language, basically striking the pilot. There's real hesitance to allow tolling on the interstates, those types of things. Is Congress now pushed in a box where the politically expedient choice, instead of raising the gas tax, is allowing these tolling programs? I can't answer that question right now, and only time will tell. Well, the current funding, well, we just talked about that. The last thing I will say, once again, is that Texas, I appreciate this opportunity, the state of Texas and the Texas Department of Transportation really is a bellwether for these innovative financing things. And Washington pays attention. And Kobe and Chase and his group have done, in my experience, did a great job in the last reauthorization, kind of educating the Hill staff so that they could go educate their members about kind of what was out there. Now, is that always going to carry the day? Maybe not. But it's important that that's out there. Truth be told, there is a backlash in Washington against tolls right now, and they have a sympathetic ear in Jim Oberstar. So how as this debate unfolds, will that show itself, manifest itself? It remains to be seen. The Senate has been largely agnostic on the issue. I mean, we went to conference, we had tolling provisions, we had some members that cared, but not nearly as much as the House folks did in the anti-toll camp. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. And with that, I hope that we can continue to move forward. And again, I appreciate the opportunity, and I'm happy to take questions.